Evening and welcome. If you'd like to turn to the book of Joshua, that's where we're going to be tonight. Let's go to God in prayer. Most High God and Father, thank you for your word. Thank you that we're able to come together tonight to study it and the things that are in it, Father. Help us to apply them to our lives. Help us to draw more closely to you every time we open your word. You've promised that would happen, Father, and we claim that promise and hope that you'll help us to grow more in our faith every time that we're together like this and when every time we open your word. Bless those members of ours that are having challenges and help Randy to get well soon and all the others, Father, that are having difficulties, that they're heal up and be able to rejoin us here. And bless this class and the others that are meeting tonight, and we pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. So Joshua. Last week was kind of introducing Joshua and how he developed initially as Moses' soldier initially, and then as his companion as they went up on Sinai, and it really brings us to looking at Joshua the leader, and specifically, it's not an easy. I've read his name a million times, and I still can't spell it here. It's not hard to find examples of his leadership because of how significant of an individual he was. Moses handed the reins over to him. God handed the reins over to him, truly. And I just want to start with reading a couple of things and then make some comments about what we'll do tonight as we take this subject on. It's really part of his commissioning that really continues in Joshua chapter 1. And let's read verses 5 through 7 of Joshua chapter 1. This is God speaking. No man will be able to stand before you all the days of your life. Just as I've been with Moses, I'll be with you. I will not fail you or forsake you. Be strong and courageous, for you shall give this people possession of the land, which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be very strong, very courageous. Only be strong and very courageous. Be careful to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, so that you may have success wherever you go. And then really, this next part's really separate, but I can think of the things that Philip's been teaching lately about the land and the law, how they tied together. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, verses 8 and 9, but you shall meditate on it day and night so that you may be careful to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous and then you will have success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not tremble or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. The base is laid for Joshua, and it's so encouraging. And I think I want to stop for a second and talk about a subject that relates to this particular book. And I wonder if God's encouragement may be related to this subject. What you see a lot of in the book of Joshua and Judges, you could refer to it as like the holy war. It's not normal war, the ones that we're about to see. Some of these things are disturbing, I know, people that are not used to reading scripture, where there's really a lot of mayhem going on with how the conquering goes on and how thorough the conquering is and how you know, it's not an easy answer to that. My thinking, the most likely explanation is that it's the struggle between good and evil. And I'm referring to the way the sword of Joshua would totally annihilate those that he would come upon. And it had to do with the cleansing of the land. And his aims were always just and good. I don't think Joshua was ever anything but just and good, and the means he chooses to achieve them. But you know, you think, what is our task in this? It's not to decide what God ought to be like or how God is, but to study how he reveals himself to us. And it's interesting, these are not normal types of warfares. Usually there are certain characteristics that you almost always see in the book of Joshua and in Judges. God is always the one in control. Yahweh is in control. He either gives the initial order to fight, or he's going to make certain that the war is in keeping with his will. God's presence usually is symbolized by what? They would carry what into the battle with them? The Ark of the Covenant. There'd often be trumpets and a great shout. The number of people that were in the force didn't really matter, because God could win with the smallest number. God could lose, or without God's help, it didn't matter. A large army couldn't win. And then there's two other features prominent that a reader always notices. In many cases, the enemy just breaks into total mayhem and confusion. And I don't think that's by coincidence or chance. That has to do with God's hand, that they bring about their own destruction. There, we see some of that even in the book of Joshua. But if God's at the head of the attack, any kind of things like that can happen. The other thing is what happens to the spoils of the war, the booty. Ordinarily, you know, an ancient soldier got to keep whatever they could get their hands on and find. Under the rules of warfare for God, the spoil was devoted. We see the word ban used also. The Hebrew word is harem. It's used in Joshua 18 and 19 and 7. And in some cases, the soldiers were allowed to keep part of the booty. But a general rule was the spoil belonged to the Lord, because it was he who had won the battle. But any other thoughts on this concept of the holy war? I just wanted to, that's a little sidebar basically tonight. I thought it was interesting because I came upon some material on that I'd never really thought of. But we see it over and over again, and we see it in this book, city after city. Joshua takes the sword, is the phrase that's used, and everyone is destroyed, and including livestock in many cases. In this book, we also have Achan, and after it's discovered that he kept some of the spoil from Jericho, and it had to be taken care of, and Joshua did indeed take care of it. And everything regarding Achan, his family, his goats, his animals, his tent, was completely cut off. What any comments on is that a picture for us of what for us in terms of what are some New Testament ideas that talk about cutting off and not having any harboring any sin?
Well, if your hand offends you, you know, cut it off, throw it from you, it's better for going laying into heaven. If you talk about something like that, just the consequence of sin.
Yeah.
It's just better to be obedient than be tempted.
That we can't countenance sin, we can't countenance evil. And God had said the consequence for these people and their destruction was their behavior and their sinfulness. Daryl.
Well, just what you mentioned, you know, cleansing the land, I think what we have to also remember is God's ultimate plan. He's in the process of planning a nation that will eventually produce the Christ, who will be the
the way out of all of this mess of sin that's been, that's basically cursed the entire world, so.
Yeah. Yeah, Joshua 23, he recounts, or 24, he recounts how it ties together, and all this ties together, and the cleansing of the land for the creation of the new nation.
We're told in the New Testament, the little leaven leavens the whole lump. If they, God had just allowed this to go, then everyone would have been taking spoils from other places. This
yeah.
Would have continued to get worse.
Yeah. Yeah. And unfortunately, we see in the book of Judges, chapter 1, they did not do what they wanted, Joshua wanted them to do too, which was take up the fight with the remaining ones that were there. We know that story. Any other comments? Okay, that was just that little thing about that. When I was in sales and sales management, I have all these books on leadership. And I have one is Leadership Lessons of Robert E. Lee. And they're good books, you know. But that's a little different leadership than I think Joshua displayed. But let me throw this out before we begin looking at some of these specific things about his leadership. Joshua's a leader. What are some characteristics that he did have? Or what are strong characteristics of a good leader? Just off the top of your head.
Organized? Yeah, he organized his army and then.
Well, yeah, as a warrior. Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. That's a good point. He's a wily, you know, warrior. So, yes, that's a good one. Yes.
Follow the orders from the boss.
Yes. We can use this word for a lot of things. He was faithful to, you know, and receptive to everything God had asked him, which was very consistent with who? Moses. Anything else?
Decisive.
I think that's a... Nope.
He was a good example.
Yep.
He was courageous. I mean, you know, people follow that. You know, it says, you know, he was courageous. You know, be strong and courageous.
Yes.
And he was, like you said, as a warrior, but also as a leader too, because people follow that. They follow that that commitment, that faithfulness, and he was very courageous in what he did.
Yeah.
When him and Caleb, you know, they said the people are too big, and this thing. I said, but with God's help, we can do that.
Yeah.
Very important.
Yeah.
It's not always critical, but in his case, he was well between he and Caleb. They were the only two of their generation left, and so he was an elder, a wise elder of the people. And you know, there was nobody else to compete with him there.
I'd say, how about that experience?
Yeah.
Very experienced. Andrew?
Just briefly running back to receptive, you can be decisive and decide and wipe out your own army by doing something foolish if you don't listen, but receptive and listening to instructions, I mean, we see here at AI that he took some orders. He sent some men off. They got killed because they didn't ask questions first, but then they did what they were supposed to, and they're successful for the rest of the campaign.
Yeah. I thought about that. He really got blindsided by that, though. But he maybe should have been a smart enough leader to think, what's going on here? But he didn't. If that's a failure on his part, we'll give him a pass on that one, maybe. Because, but I think God was not happy. You know, rise up. He wasn't happy with his response.
Right. A couple more based on that one: learning and also strategic.
Yep, yep. What's the first one you said? Strategic.
Learn from his mistakes.
He learned from it. Yes, yes. Yep. He was open-minded to God, okay, I'm running out of room, so maybe that's pretty good right there. Any others? Yes.
It's interesting the difference between him and Moses. I mean, you had Moses who had been raised as a prince, as a leader, as a general to Egypt. We read in historical accounts, aside from the Bible and Josephus, we see that Moses led armies into battle when he was young. Joshua was a slave when he was young. So just like completely, but he grew into his position and he became such a great leader for his people and became a general. So it's just, the backgrounds are so different for the two, but Joshua took his place.
That scripture said he was a youth when he started with Moses. So those 40 years had passed since Sinai and everything. So this is an idea I got from Philip. Remember Philip had these tables up here and he'd have little papers and you'd match things and all that. We're going to read just a few verses. And I want you to tell me what characteristics you think he may have been displaying in some of these individual instances. We already talked about one sort of, it was AI. AI, boy, we talk about AI a lot now, don't we? Oh, I never thought about that. We get erased that out of my mind here.
It shows that AI is bad.
So like, as an example, we're not gonna look at chapter 2, by the way, to give a plug for Rick next week. Chapter 2 is the spies sent to Jericho and whose house they went to, because a week from today, Rick is going to take on Rahab, that character, and I'll talk about that. So jumping over to chapter 3, this has got to do with the people crossing the Jordan, and Joshua says to the people in verse 5, Joshua said to the people, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. And then he starts talking about taking up the ark and as they would approach. Any of these things,
faithfulness.
Yeah, faithfulness. I was looking at this word here. This is kind of a similar word, right? I guess that means to encourage is to pass your feelings, motivation onto others. But it's interesting how Joshua, like God, some people say this book's a book of prophecy. These Bible scholar people, because truly he is a prophet in many ways, some of the things he would say, but he's encouraging them by by the things he's saying here. Any other leadership qualities here? He's encouraging.
Well, he was obedient, obviously.
Yes.
Obviously, he's not making up what he's doing. He's doing what the Lord told him to do.
Yeah, and many of these quotes we're reading, the Lord just tells him to do it, and he's very receptive and faithful to obey what God is asking. Similarly, same chapter 9 through 13 in chapter 3, Joshua's telling the people, behold, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord is of all the earth is crossing over ahead of you into the Jordan. Now then, take for yourselves 12 men from the tribes of Israel, one man for each tribe. And it shall come about when the soles of the feet of the priests who carry the ark of the Lord, the Lord of all the earth, shall rest in the waters of the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan shall be cut off, and the waters which are flowing down from above shall stand in one heap. Similar, right? Moses had a tougher deal, I have to admit. the Red Sea. But Joshua was faithful in what he knew the waters would, they didn't stand in a heap. It sounds like the river actually stopped flowing, basically, from up further up the river. But either way, any specific things he's showing in his leadership there? Similar, the faithfulness. Jump ahead to chapter 4.
He's showing it's a relationship with God, or he would not have known those things. You know, you talk about him being prophetic, you know. When he says these things and then they actually come true, it's...
Yeah. And it's his...
No, this is God's man.
His confidence in God and the confidence in the Father. He's, as a leader, he's totally vested in what he's doing for the Lord. And what better person to be leading them in this task that they have ahead of them. Another example is in chapter 4, after they've finished crossing verses 4 through 7, this is about the stones. Joshua called the 12 men who he appointed from the sons of Israel, one man from each tribe. Joshua said to them, cross again to the ark of the Lord your God in the middle of the Jordan, and each of you take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Israel. Let this be a sign among you so that when your children ask later, saying, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall say to them, because the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord, when it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones shall become a memorial. Anything specifically he's doing there? We could say a teacher. Because remember in the last class we talked about defeating the Amalekites, he was told to write it down. It's the first time in the Bible he's ever been asked to write something down. But to remember it. And same thing, we got a memorial, and so that's maybe encouraging and an example and teaching, basically. Chapter 5, verses 3 through 5. This is a lot of things in this chapter, in this book. Joshua made himself flint knives and circumcised the sons of Israel at Gilboa, whatever that is. And here is the reason why Joshua circumcised them. All the people who came out of Egypt who were males, all the men of war, died in the wilderness along the way after they came out of Egypt. For all the people who came out were circumcised, but all the people who were born in the wilderness along the way as they came out of Egypt had not been circumcised. So we're just picking out things where Joshua was involved. And again, verse 2, who had just told him to do this? The Lord had. So he's faithful and receptive to do what the Lord asks. And
that really goes against logic when you think about it, because that would have left them vulnerable when you think about the men of Shechem. After they were circumcised, that's when, you know, Reuben and Simeon went and killed them all.
Yeah.
And here they are entering this foreign land and all of a sudden crippling themselves for a few days.
Yeah. It appeared, though, that there wasn't a lot of military challenge where they were, evidently. No, I mean, and everybody was scared as could be that they were coming. It sounds like Jericho was, so maybe we just know what we know here. There's an interesting chapter account. It's in the end of chapter 5, verses 13 through 15. Someone else... Vince, you want to read 13 through 15 of chapter 5?
Now it came about when Joshua was by Jericho that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, a man was standing opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? And he said, no, rather I indeed come now as captain of the host of the Lord. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and bowed down. and said to him, What has my Lord to say to his servant? And the captain of the Lord's host said to Joshua, Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place where you are standing is holy. And Joshua did so.
Any comments about that one? This is
at first with the drawn sword in his hand. He doesn't cower. He just confronts him directly.
Yes. Yeah. That's showing him, again, his harmony with God and with God's will, I think. I think it's an encouragement, again, to God sending. This is really about God in this case, more so than about Joshua. It's God saying, move forward. And my thing in this story about the Holy War, in many ways, there's a lot said about Moses not wanting to initially do what God wanted him to do. And you wonder if Joshua needed to be encouraged to a dramatic amount, because what he was about to do, and he was the tip of the spear, so to speak. He had to lead everybody and make those calls and do what they needed to do in everything involved in conquering the land. That's just an impression I've had, having been with Joshua the last several days here. Let's go over to chapter 6 and verses 6 and 7. Now we're going into Jericho, and we don't need to talk too much about the content, because everybody knows these, very familiar with these things, but Joshua's told them to take up the Ark of the Covenant, let seven priests carry seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Ark of the Lord, and he told them to go around the city, and went into detail. But I thought verse 10 was interesting. He said, but Joshua commanded the people, saying, You shall not shout, nor let your voice be heard, nor let a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I tell you, shout. Then you shall shout. It's just interesting that that's in there. God, the whole first part of this chapter, went into detail as to how they needed to do what they were going to be doing. And then Joshua, verses 1 through 5 is God giving the instructions on what they needed to do. And then Joshua immediately jumps into the action mode and does this. But he adds that on. I think someone was talking about his strategy, maybe. He didn't want them to foul that up. They needed to follow specifically what God had asked them to do in regards to when to shout. Because it was a long week, I guess. Was it 6 days, 7 days, 6 days? So stop me any comments about that. And then, of course, in verse 16, it came about on the seventh time when the priest blew the trumpet, Joshua said to the people, Shout, for the Lord has given you the city.
I was just thinking how, the charisma that Joshua had, as well as how inspiring of a leader he was. Just thinking about the people, all of the people, keeping silent for 6 days of marching around the wall. And how many, just thinking about and people I've met and whatnot, how many people would just be like, what's the point in that? And just brush it off and not follow and not obey, because they don't see a reason to do it. But everybody seems to have obeyed Joshua. And he inspired them that this is something that is needed to be done, and they were willing to follow it. Even such a strange, seemingly strange command.
Yeah. He was really parroting what the Lord had done, really, because remember, God talked in past tense about Jericho. He said, it's already yours, or however he said it. And he said the same thing about Ai, that it's, so I think he was doing the same thing. He was saying it's already ours. But that's and that's conveyed to the people, I believe, too. The same encouragement. Catherine.
And just two comments. One was related to the angel that you saw and how Josh was asking the question, are you for on our side or are you on our enemy's side?
Yeah.
The angel doesn't say I'm on your side. He says, no, I'm on the Lord's side. And just that puts it, whose side are you on? Am I on the Lord's side or am I on the other side?
Yeah.
And so many times when there's two sides, we're like, well, God's on my side. But we should be really asking, am I on God's side?
Yeah.
And then I was thinking about with the not shouting, it's hard to picture, we're not told what the people of Jericho were doing during all this time, but it's hard to picture them watching the Israelites going silently around the walls without the picturing them jeering. I can't picture them not jeering after they've been doing this for a few days.
Yeah.
And so once you get people jeering at you, it'd be very hard to not start shouting back.
Yeah. And you read something, it's a pretty big city. Pretty long walk. But I think they were scared to death. I think they were trembling. Because we seem to get that a lot throughout Joshua regarding these other cities, the Gibeon thing, and all these cities are like, whoa. They immediately organize and they get ready to fight Joshua.
Well, there are a few places in the Old Testament where the Lord specifically says, I will send my terror upon them. You know, and that this is something that's even miraculous in a sense, that they are just terrified because the Lord is putting that on them. Catherine made an interesting point about, you know, whose side are you on? When I was reading that, I thought, God's on everyone's side. You know, he doesn't want anyone to perish.
True.
So there's, you know, he's not really taking sides, but he's got a purpose he's trying to serve.
Them. Yes. But then there's taking up our armor. There's a war.
Our war is against Satan, not flesh and blood.
I mean, as it relates to Joshua's leadership, the people have had to get used to following some unconventional orders, you know, such as the circumcision and being quiet while you're circling the city. And in part, that the message I think they're supposed to get from that is that you're not conquering this land by your might. It's God that's doing it for you.
Yes. Yeah, he closes this book. Everything that's just happened was in God's strength. You know? Yes.
I think it also shows how different this generation is from the last generation. If you had the last generation out there trying to march them around the city silently, they definitely probably would have been complaining about it.
That's true.
This is a group that has been basically raised in the desert to become the soldiers of God and to follow Joshua's lead.
Well, they've been taught over and over again, this is a long game right here. Really long game. And this is not about today. Good point. We'll try to do a couple more of these. Then I really have to jump to the closing chapters. The defeat of Ai. We've already talked about that, really. Andrew made some comments about that, so we'll skip that. Verses 1-5 of chapter 7. And they sent a small number of people up and got repulsed. And Joshua was really pleading with God in verses 7-9. Alas, O God, O Lord God, why didst thou ever bring this people over the Jordan only to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us? If only we had been willing to dwell beyond the Jordan. O Lord, what can I say since Israel has turned their back before their enemies, for the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land will hear of it, and they will surround us and cut off our name from the earth. And what wilt thou do for thy great name? I wonder if he'd ever heard anybody else talk like that the last 40 years. It is a similar pleading on behalf of the people that Moses would do. But God responds very clearly about rise up and gives him specifically what he needs to do in regard of Achan. And 23-26, is a record of Joshua dealing with Achan, and we've already talked about that a little bit too. Any comments on that? That had to be difficult, but it's necessary. But here's some of their own. These aren't the heathen idolaters that they're destroying in these cities, but it had to be done. And you see some of these exact same. He's doing what exactly what God had told him to do, basically. And he knew that the result would be God would be on their side again, and they would press on. Let's just go to the last chapters of this book. They're so, so encouraging. And it's an interesting book because, like, 12 to 22 of Joshua, as we know, is very important records. They list all the kings that he destroyed and killed. So it's great history. And I've read things about archaeological digs, and they find these cities, Eglon, and all these places. And it's consistent with the book of Joshua in terms of the historic things. But they also list many other things, the cities of refuge, all these land allotments and inheritances, very important things. And Joshua organizes it incredibly well. He sounds like a frustrated, you know, CEO. Get out there and start marking off this land and bring the results back to me so that we can get this done, basically. And he does succeed in getting that to happen. And actually, let's read 21 and 43 to 45. 21, 43 to 45. This is a good concluding verses. And I'll go back to you, Vince. How about you, 43 to 45 of Joshua chapter 21.
So the Lord gave Israel all the land which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they possessed it and lived in it. And the Lord gave them rest on every side, according to all that he had sworn to their fathers, and no one of all their enemies stood before them. The Lord gave all their enemies into their hand. Not one of the good promises which the Lord had made to the house of Israel failed. All came to pass.
So was Joshua unsuccessful in that he did not, annihilate everybody in the land? Not according to this. He was successful in breaking the backs of all those major areas and major cities. Rick talked the other day about one area that he did not conquer, which was what? Jerusalem, the Jebusites. And I've seen some maps where he really did successfully conquer most of the area, except there's a big spot over there around Jerusalem. Let's switch over to chapter 23 and verses 2 through 8. How about Daryl? Do you want to do that one? 2 through 8 of chapter 23.
23, verse 2, that Joshua called for all Israel, for their elders, and their heads, and their judges, and their officers, and said to them, I am old, advanced in years, and you have seen all that the Lord your God has done to all these nations because of you, for the Lord your God is he who has been fighting for you. See, I have apportioned to you these nations which remain as an inheritance for your tribes, with all the nations which I have cut off from the Jordan even to the great sea toward the setting of the sun. And the Lord your God, he shall thrust them out from before you and drive them from before you, and you shall possess their land just as the Lord your God promised you. Be very firm then to keep and do all that is written in the book of the law of Moses, so that you may not turn aside from it to the right hand or to the left, in order that you may not associate with these nations, these which remain among you, or mention the name of their gods, or make anyone swear by them, or serve them, or bow down to them.
Yeah, he continues the same thought on. He's teaching. He's encouraging and teaching as he's reached an old age. And it's almost, he's saying two things at the same time. It's as good as done that you can continue to drive out these other nations. The ball's in your court. However, if you, you know, go over to Judges chapter 1, if you intermarry, if you worship their idols, etc., you will not succeed. It is as good as not done. We have to go to the closing things in chapter 24, verses 2 through 13. I'm not going to read all that. It sounds like some things we see in the Psalms and Stephen, before he was stoned, he goes through a long, specific history of the things that had happened so far. It's a history lesson that Joshua teaches for them to understand the significance. And then, of course, the same famous quote, Les, why don't you read 14 and 15 of chapter 24?
Now, therefore, fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord. And if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the God of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord.
It's a famous quote, and I think it's him doing everything in his power to help them to be faithful. Even appealing to, if you appreciated my leadership, I'm going to serve the Lord. Andrew.
Back to chapter 13, you have one of the more unusual comments that God makes to somebody, and that's God telling him he's old. In 13, he says, you're old and advanced in years, and there's a lot of land still yet to be taken over, but go ahead, set the lots for all the land. So it's obvious here, he's telling Joshua, you're not going to be able to finish the job. Go ahead and divide it, let everybody. They're supposed to finish it after you to go.
And then on the other hand, he's told he did do his job. You know,
no, he's told he did what he was supposed to do. It's just that the job's so big, it can't be done in his lifetime. It's not going to be done in his lifetime.
Thanks, y'all. Rahab, next Wednesday, right?